That's not much to come down from the mountain with, for the edification of my people. Maybe there just is no common language between our space-time universe and the eternal world, or common concepts, or ours just don't really apply. I can see where it is an enormous task, really beyond our ability when we, I mean religious leaders, those actually into forming religions and subsects, struggle with such a titanic fiery wind from another universe, a far vaster reality in all respects, trying to codify it, put it into linguistic categories, trying to figure it out, cope with the enormous paradoxes which effortlessly transcend and defy human reason. Priests from the time of the Cro-Magnon through Sumer, Egypt, the Greek mystery religions, on down to Calvin and Luther and Tillich, we're all getting massive headaches and sitting up all night trying and trying to explain to ourselves and to write it down coherently. The secular world supposes that religion is a fake and a snare, and we've got nothing to offer but a lot of flack talk. But in fact, the reality behind the words is so far removed from what we can comprehend that our problem is really trying to reduce it and make our kind of sense out of it, and always failing, failing, and never giving up, knowing what it means, but never being able to get it right. Never, never, always seeing something new or previously unseen, always understanding it better, giving up and then starting over, getting closer and closer, wondering if we were meant to try this. But it's a way of remembering what happened, of recalling it. The prolonged, arduous work shows that something happened. As they say in modern semantics and philosophy, the word banana points to something which we call a banana but isn't, because banana is the word, not the thing pointed to. In this case, the disparity between words and the thing pointed to are probably the greatest possible. In 14 months, I found that my experience fits every description of personal mystic religious experience, and none, every specific religion, and none. Each system or explanation works as well as any other, but none really is congruent. There is always a part left over, and in the night, that small unexplained part or fact grows like the mustard seed or the leaven until it is the whole loaf or landscape by morning. It's as if the experience itself were alive. If I were going to pick one tantalizing aspect I can't account for, and would give an arm and a leg to do so, it is that when my experience began, I had the acute impression, absolutely real and unshakable, that I had been seeing the universe backward all my life, or somehow inside out, which is also the same as backward, reversed, going in the wrong way, which means that I had suddenly begun to see it not just going in the opposite direction, but correctly, at last. It wasn't just time alone going in reverse. It was like instead of being inside a sphere-like universe, I was now outside on the skin. Inside was outside. The future was controlling the past. The smallest, least valuable objects assumed tremendous importance. There was solemn and vital information in near silence. And then I read in the Gospel of Thomas, where Christ says something like, "The kingdom will come when the outer is the inner, the bigger, the smaller, the man, the woman, etc." Except he says, the image, as if that is the one constant. Maybe it's a Jungian psychological reversal of all functions and aspects of the psyche, the not I becoming the I, etc. But random juxtapositions of writing produced meaningful, God-sent, in fact, information. The stone rejected by the builder, maybe, whatever that means. The meaningless became meaningful, especially in arrangement. And the ultimate, found in much mystical writing, the void and God were found together as if God, when at last experienced, turned out to be nothing, which is like what Origina used to say. Literally, God is not. Maybe we have our entire set ground system wrong. Every feature we extract through isolated scrutiny as important is really background, and vice versa. But you can't overcome this by switching your focus to what you'd considered background before. It is in the self-creating, deciding on of set that the error lies. We select, or are trained to select, set. Maybe this is primarily a basic shift in the visual system whereby the whole set ground discrimination ends and a new or different kind of sight obtains. No attempt is made at any level in the eye-brain mechanism to extract features. Ground and set are allowed to blend. And then reality itself, without our making a preconceived, programmed, trained habitual effort, is allowed to swim around until certain facets or linking regularities in it intrinsically not projected by us or sought for, not discriminated by our brains, but actually there, register as ultra-real. These might be regarded as patterns, I guess. Some thread of recognition might call them to our attention, some forgotten memory. We recognize a friend. Like a creature with compound eyes, maybe we trace movement as such, or utilize parallaxes and extract only that which has true depth, or rely on color formations. The last, color, could act to inscribe far-ranging patterns around us hitherto unsuspected, being partly in what was set and partly in what was ground. How about a three-dimensional moving color forming messages of construction and comfort? From a total relaxation, a giving up of the automatization of perception, the model of the universe each of us builds, through weariness or despair or fear. It breaks down to reveal the koinos cosmos beneath, which to our surprise is like the magic garden. My contribution to Deichmann's study of this is, we like to be able to recognize everything, to know, label what it is. Our early textbooks teach us to do this: horse, cow, cat, mother. Once we have identified everything, then reality has passed away and we're in a world of the familiar, stuck there because we wanted it that way. It's frightening not to know where you are and what things are around you when you're little. It's a form of scientific magic. It depotentiates the menacing and the hostile by abolishing the unknown. The word, category, a sort of ersatz logos, replaces reality as in time out of joint. It's perceptual stereotyping, lazy vision. The trouble is, sitting here for instance, I do know what each object is. I know its name, I know its purpose, what it does, etc. I can't unknow that this is a typewriter, this here my light, this over here the air conditioner. How am I going to get back, regress to the magic kingdom, be as little children? Well, switch from my left to right hemisphere maybe. There are close scrutiny techniques of the visual mantra type, stare at one object for weeks. This at most, though, might provide methods or techniques for seeing what is there beyond the semi-verbal model. There is still, upon having seen, the problem of conveying and comprehending it. I think we as a species really have fallen in that we are very cut off from mat, from justice and order, and the voice of conscience telling us what is justice, what promotes order, what is truth. As Heraclitus said, we are stumbling around asleep, unable to see the logos, that which mat through tath has built. Parmenides' notion of the all and how it must be contrasted to what we experience, he described it as radically symmetric, which I understand as being the same everywhere. If this is so, then theoretically, one could comprehend the structure of the whole upon any authentic encounter with it, perception of it, no matter how small the segment, sector, in time, and space. This recalls to me my Three Lives dream, in which I was first in an alternate world where I was famous and flew everywhere, and then very poor in a Mexican or Italian town. And in the dream, the fan-shaped triune sections were extended to show that no matter where or how you took a core sample or segment or fragment, from it, the extremes on each side could advance out fan blade-like, with a Tao always created in the center. Each partial life was generated into a state of triune completeness, too little, just right, balanced, too much. I sensed, watched the slimmest sample expand into what, in terms of universal constants, was an entire world. I don't think you could cut it too small to exclude that spontaneous process of total regeneration of world. That means that the all is immediately palpable. Break a stick, and there am I, and I am the all. If viewed at all, I mean, if it is seen, it is not seen partially in an impaired way, as we always see reality. This is the opposite of the blind man with the elephant situation. Now, the implications of this, as I believe God is an immanent God, are enormous. In fact, this might account for what I experienced, because given immanence, then when you encounter him in the alley, you have encountered him completely, just as much so as if you met him in heaven, in the Selim. It is not like a portion of God, analogous to a hand or arm of one of us. Like Kozyrev's theory of time, the whole thing is projected from a single point. At any point where he is totally and to the extent that he can be known, he can be totally known. One does not experience a portion of God. This makes clear how his immanence works, how he can be everywhere, but not necessarily everything. I wonder what's in my other dreams of equal value in exegesis. Anyhow, regarding this projection from every point of the complete all, then any glimpse of it, as I say, would be an encounter with its totality, and would, by definition, not be partial, and therefore probably more than could be comprehended. No matter how gently filtered or muted, or revealed in progressive degrees of emergent clarity, by the time the encounter was over, the mortal creature would be amazed. Later, he would find himself trying to depict an infinitude in ordinary words, which is to say, he would find that which he experienced to be inexhaustible. Probably, he would keep trying and wonder why, i.e., why even if it lasted only a little while, he can't completely describe it or explain it. He would forever be trying to fully explicate or explain it all, what he saw along the gutter here and there, which shone, saw in a time period of 3 minutes one day, and is greater than the universe. Put another way, it seems reasonable that if after 14 months of unending exegesis, reading, studying, pondering, etc., one has still failed to even begin to account for what one saw in those 3 minutes, when in fact more remains to explain and understand than ever, then there is reason to believe the vision authentic. The fact that one can't say, explain, or account for may reveal more than if one could. That it would be the complete deity, even when scaled down to a micropoint, would explain the striking account of Elijah finally encountering God in the still small voice, and not in larger, more spectacular forms. Also, the ancient Hebrew priests declaring that the voice of God is like the cooing of doves. By the same token, therefore, I might be correct in supposing that the faint, distant, mild, composed voice I have heard is that of God himself, and not that of a demiurge, it not being necessary for him to employ such just to scale himself down. Some of the foolishness of doctrines diminishing the Trinity can be exposed by understanding this. Obviously, each person or member can be equal to God, although in a very real sense, less. Christ was equal to God, but God was greater than he. Ordinary language doesn't apply here. What is meaningful is to understand that all of God is reconstructible from a single bit or expression or manifestation. I would think that in this fashion, the omniscience of God is explained. How, under these circumstances, could there be signal loss or contamination?